Hey, this is Golden Tate, and you're listening to the Pride of Detroit podcast.
Stands for Pride Detroit Podcast. That's what it stands for. That's what the POD is for. It's not the band. It's Pride Detroit POD. Now that you know what it is, that's who we are. Now you know where you're at. PrideDetroit.com, at Pride Detroit on Twitter. For the Detroit Lions of the NFL, that's who we talk about. That's why you're here. That's what you want to listen to. That's what you want to hear about. We're here to tell you about the Detroit Lions. Things you already know or things you might not already know. The Writer's Lounge for all the Pride of Detroit writers. Here with me, as always, Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader.
Howdy, howdy.
And Ryan Matthews. Black is the motherfucking rock god. At Ryan underscore P-O-D. And I am Chris Lemieux at Adequate Host. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing splendid. How are you doing, Chris?
We'll go with I. It's been a interesting little day so far. Before we get to the Lions, we have to say goodbye to the Oakland Raiders. Hello to the Las Vegas Raiders. The relocation effort just went to a vote. 31 in favor, 1 opposed, with the 1 opposed being the Miami Dolphins, because God knows why. Just one of those, it's probably, you know, the Davis clan offended Stephen Ross by, like, I don't know, taking an umbrella out of his little mixed drink or something.
There's actually, I thought I saw a story that he put in like $500 million for renovations for the Dolphins personally, so that's why he's against all this sort of, you know, publicly funded stadium stuff.
Oh, whatever. He's the Carnival Cruise guy, right? He runs all those cruise ships. Those things are floating tombs. Like, whatever. It's true. Have you ever been on a cruise ship? They're fucking awful.
I'm old, but I'm not that old.
I saw somebody else on Twitter bring this up, though. It was like Miami voted nay because they're like, hey, there's only one NFL organization that can be run by the mob, and it's us.
That's true. It's run by the mob. Like, this feels like such a weird move, doesn't it? Like, we all have been known it's going to happen, and yet they're also going to be rubbing salt in the wound for the next 2 years until 2019 when the stadium's complete. But, I mean, it's like the Raiders have moved before, but it's always been under the context of like, okay, it's Cali, and now all of a sudden it's, I don't know, like Vegas maybe once upon a time might have stood for the same things you think of when you talk about the Raiders, but I don't know, it just feels like a weird combination, Las Vegas and the Raiders.
Yeah, I like the idea of an NFL team in Vegas, I really do, because it seems to me like it's going to be an away team's haven of like, all these sports fans from one team from all over the world joining together to watch their team in an away setting. And it's, you know, it's got like a little circus feeling to it, just having a team in Vegas. But the Raiders, just that didn't seem like the right team for it. Why not the Jaguars?
You have thoughts on this, Ryan? I know you were talking about the glorious home field advantage you think they will have, which I agree with you, by the way. But
yeah, I don't. I think when the idea of Las Vegas first came up, I was really interested in the idea from the aspect that Las Vegas is probably the entertainment capital of the world, per se. I mean, they specialize in having so many shows and whatnot. Like, I haven't seen a lot of people bring up the fact that Las Vegas got a hockey team too this year.
Because no one cares about hockey in the desert.
Right. Nobody cares about hockey in the desert because now you're going to have to sell out. Or try to sell like 41 games.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's where it becomes less of an attraction. Whereas you bring in a football organization and you have to sell 8 games a year. And I think that's a pretty attractive, like Jeremy brought up. I think that's a, you know, a pretty attractive destination for visiting teams to go to. But I don't know. I do think it's going to be like a serious home field advantage because coaches are already talking about how they're going to keep their teams away from the strip.
oh yeah, it's going to be like worse than a team going to play in Miami or New Orleans.
Yeah.
You don't think they're going to be able to succeed, though? And just like, hey, we're going to stay the hell away from all that. We're going to be in a hotel that doesn't even have lobbies.
They don't do it. Dude, they don't do it in New Orleans. They don't succeed in New Orleans. They don't succeed in Miami. Now you're telling me they're going to succeed in Vegas?
I don't know. I think they might. But I guess it depends on the coach and the organization. But I'm really intrigued at what the crowd is going to look like at these games. Because... we put it out there today. The Lions are scheduled to play Oakland or play the Raiders away in 2019. And it's still up in the air whether the Raiders are going to be in Las Vegas by then or not. But if they are, I've already seen at least like 100 Lions fans that saying, we're going. If they're in Vegas, we are going. And that's online. Like, it's going to be huge away crowds.
I can understand those huge away crowds, but I guess from the sense of like, you know, you can talk about the home field advantage being in Vegas all you want, but then I'm looking more at the Raiders fans, or at least the amalgamation of what would be former Raiders fans in California. Because let's face it, they're both in the north and the south. They're in Oakland and they're in Los Angeles, because LA has always been a big part of the Raiders fan base. And the LA people, I think, will be able to make those drives probably easier than the people from Oakland. I don't know what's going to happen there. I don't even know if Oakland fans really want to... stick around after all this, but you know, we'll have to ask. Maybe we can try asking our friends at Silver and Black Pride sometime. I think that'd be interesting. But I think the problem is that you're trying to mesh those with what few locals in Vegas you would have who are going to be able to get off work to come to this. Because let's face it, like, those are probably the only people or people who are working in Vegas. Everyone else in the state of Nevada is like a retiree with a pension plan. Like, they're not making the rounds out. They're not making up the new black hole. So I'm worried about a situation like, I think I was talking with the Jaguars guys from Big Cat Country. And when I talked with Ryan Day for the five questions, I had just seen in the news that apparently the Jaguars gift shop sells jerseys and t-shirts and fan gear from away teams when they come to town. I just feel like that's the kind of situation. That's the fan situation. That's the organization's attitude towards fans that you are going to see with Las Vegas Raiders. And I just think that's sad, because this is the Raiders we're talking about. A very, probably the most storied AFL team it's probably the Raiders and the Chiefs. When you think about the old American Football League, the Raiders are the most iconic name from that era.
Well, and yeah, at that point, they're no longer fans. You're catering to customers.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that's the way it's been going, but still, it's sad.
Yeah. No, it definitely is. I think it is sad. But I mean, clearly, they just didn't have the resources in Oakland to make a deal happen and to get a stadium and to get their shit kind of together in Oakland. Like, trust me, I would have loved to see that team stay there, but, I mean, they were last in attendance.
Yeah, the Oco is a piece of shit. Like, yeah, and they weren't getting anything done.
Yeah, so it's a bummer. But the other thing, too, about keeping players away from the Strip, I mean, Jordan played in New York, and he still made a two-hour car trip to Atlantic City to play cards before Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals, so... And it also got him suspended by David Stern, so...
Now, to put a bow on it, like, just bring back it to my original point. I'm actually excited about all this talk about, like, bringing it to the customer rather than the fan. I'm okay with that, because it seems fun to me to just kind of have this playground in Vegas, but the real tragedy is that it's the Raiders, right?
Well, I mean, I don't want to see that happen to any team, because, like, I mean, if you had made this an expansion team, okay, maybe we can make that argument, but, like, come on, what if we use that same attitude about the Lions? What if the Lions are like, okay, we want to just, you know, market this, not to you guys, the customers, not defend the Den or all these other things to appeal to your idea that you are a fan base? Because that's the shift that's been in the NFL, and it's all across the league. It's no longer about the home field advantage. Is no longer dictated by, okay, you have rabid, slavering fans who just hoot and howl and they're crazy for the team or anything. No, it's about who can sell the suite tickets, who can get the corporate you know, the sweet corporate accounts with all with like the big companies will buy 100 suites or whatever for a season.
Yeah, yeah,
like, that's where it's gone.
Right. Even with the Lions, like their major stadium upgrades this year are coming at the club level, you know, with the suites, with all that sort of stuff. I agree. But yeah, I think you're right. If it would have been an expansion team, or, you know, I was just thinking a team that doesn't have that core following, that doesn't have that history that the Raiders do, it would be okay. It would be kind of fun. But
like the Chargers?
Like the Chargers. We're going to play in StubHub Stadium. Yeah.
Yeah. Los Angeles is going to be a mess. Between two Los Angeles teams and the Raiders fans traveling to Vegas, like, I don't know what's going to happen with Los Angeles. It's already a shitty.
No one's going to go to the Chargers games.
Yeah.
You know what? I've been thinking about this. LA really is more of a college football town than an NFL town.
Sort of. Really a basketball town, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'm just saying, when it comes to football, USC and UCLA were probably far bigger draws than the Rams and Chargers.
They are, but I feel like they're only from the rabid fan bases that go there. Like, people who are just in LA don't give a shit.
But I mean, like, when USC was at, like, the top of the world, Pete Carroll, that was a huge ticket in the Coliseum.
Probably. I wasn't here during that time, so I can't speak to personal experience, but maybe. We're bandwagon-y here.
That's fair. I mean, like, when you have a lot to do outside the sports, you kind of have, you know, other things to do. But, I mean, yeah, like, that was kind of my big beef with it, is that it's... I mean, would you want to see this happen to the Lions? No, of course you wouldn't. Of course you wouldn't. So it always feels a little gross seeing fans glom on and saying, like, oh, yeah, we'll totally enjoy going there. I understand why they would want to go there, but just, you know, think about it. What if it was your team? That's the only thing I offer. Sure. Granted, we don't really have to worry too much about that because, I mean, on one hand, probably the worst of Detroit's economic crisis has passed. And number two, like, it would be suicide for, like, the entire Ford family and all their ventures and everything else to move them out of Detroit because they're the Fords.
Yep. I mean, this is another opportunity to be actually thankful for the Fords, right?
I guess a little bit. I'm not going to be thankful about any billionaires, but
just fundamentally against your beliefs, Chris.
Mm-hmm. It always is. We've been going on for this a bit. Do you guys want to take a break? I want to talk about Matt Stafford on this podcast. We have quite a bit because I've found it fascinating because every now we're still a month away from the draft. And I find it fascinating that people, I mean, we kind of had a little bit of talk about Matt Stafford and his contract and whether or not he would get a lot of money or even if he was going to be worth that money. And we laughed it off. We all laughed it off, but I think there is a chance for us to set the record straight, wouldn't you say? Because not only on that, but on these like previews, I'm starting to see a lot of people are saying stuff like, you know, Stafford, it was just streakiness. You can't expect that again in 2017. But yeah, it's there's a lot to digest about Stafford. Do you guys want to get into that next?
Yeah, we'll get into that next and then maybe talk a little draft after that.
Yeah, and we also got we're bringing Rage Corner back. We're going to be talking about a few other things. We got a pretty good mailbag on this show. So, you know, got through the first bit. Stick around. A lot more to come here on the Pride of Detroit podcast. Pride of Detroit podcast rolls along PODcast, and let's talk a little bit about Stafford. It's always a big issue. We always love talking about number nine with the hotcakes. And I mean, most of us here will say straight up he had a great 2016 season. I am seeing a lot of preview stuff for the season that are kind of slagging on it a bit, kind of looking a little skeptically about how, I mean, and for good reason, like the Lions had so many games close by the skin of their teeth. A lot of people just says that can't happen again. And just kind of that crept up into my mind while we were talking last week about the NFC North, what they did in their free agency. So I just kind of, I mean, we never really did a review on quarterbacks. There's only one quarterback to review.
Not in this town. There isn't.
Not in this town. Yeah, just wait for camp. We'll hear plenty about Rudok, sure. You want to talk about Rudok?
No, I don't want to talk about Rudok. Let's talk about Matthew Stafford. Let's talk about the 2016 he had. I mean, yeah, you want to talk about all the miraculous comebacks? Sure. You want to talk about how there might be, you know, a regression to the mean and, you know, 9 wins might not be viable next year? Sure. But, I mean, there's still an awful lot of dominoes to fall. There's still the draft to happen. He's got a new right side of his offensive line that I think a lot of us would agree is improved over last season. But even if the team, you know, will regress to that mean a little bit, and maybe they aren't a 9-7 team, but I mean, I don't think anything can be said more about Matthew Stafford's development as a quarterback. You know, as soon as Jim Caldwell showed up, and I really don't want to undersell what kind of changes Caldwell has. Has, you know, not necessarily just made to Stafford, but there has to be some kind of connection, right? Like, some kind of connection.
Well, absolutely. I mean, he was kind of the gunslinger type of quarterback before Jim Caldwell came to town, and Caldwell, like, pulled the reins on that a little bit. Like, let's talk about ball protection a little bit. And, you know, since then, he threw 19 touchdowns before the season before Caldwell came in, and he hasn't thrown more than 13 in a season since.
Well, interceptions, I think
right? Interceptions. What did I say?
Yeah,
touchdowns. Yeah. Nope, that'd not be good.
Sorry,
that'd
interceptions.
Good. No, interceptions.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
Well, let me ask on this, because I feel like there's a few factors that kind of cloud how we talk about Matt Stafford, and maybe I'm approaching this when I say we. I'm approaching it from a national media standpoint too, not just whatever goes on Detroit Sports Talk Radio, but I'm sure they're just as down on the Lions sometimes. But let me start on this. First off, the first thing I hear about Stafford is always like, I mean, you guys can talk about development, but I assume we're coming in here, we're approaching it as development. I think a lot of people might have still see that 1 year as a flash in the pan, and they have doubts about his future moving forward, that if he can sustain what he did, not the comebacks, but just his production. The second part I would say is there is still the aftershock of talking about Calvin Johnson. I don't know really where to go with that. I think that's kind of blown over by now. But the third part is, and it's not Jim Caldwell, but all the time as we talked about Stafford developing, a lot of that success from him went into Jim Bob Cooter and talking about the Jim Bob Cooter offense. And Jim Bob Cooter almost became a bigger name to talk about than Matt Stafford at points during the season. So I just want to know your thoughts on any of that. Like, you know, I've given you I put these all on the table. Let me see what you guys put together with this.
Well, in regards to Jim Bob Cooter, it's hard to argue that there wasn't a huge bump in play, and maybe it's Jim Bob Cooter, maybe it's just the fact that Lombardi's gone. Maybe just anyone who stepped in there could have done a better job than Lombardi. It's kind of hard to know. But I think towards the end of the season, you really did kind of have a blowback back on, you know, everyone kind of pulling the reins back on the Jim Bob Cooter hype train, with the Lions offense, you know, not being that great down the stretch. And in general, there was some questionable play calling, which is a whole kind of different aspect to Jim Bob Cooter that isn't really relevant to the Matthew Stafford conversation. But one thing in terms of like the regression that people maybe saw towards the end of the season, whether, you know, I think more national people kind of view that as more of a regression to the mean with Stafford. Like, okay, he was never really this MVP candidate. This was just being overblown. We have to talk about the injury, right? We have to talk about the finger.
The finger.
I mean, at the time, and I still don't believe it was as big of a factor as maybe some Lions fans are making it out to be, but it obviously was a factor. It needs to be part of the discussion.
No, I mean, not only does it need to be part of the discussion, I think it needs to be at the forefront of any discussion you have about Matthew Stafford kind of, I guess, falling back to earth. And not only that, but, and you know, I gave Terrell Austin a lot of leeway this season when it came to the fact that the personnel that he had, and in terms of what the defense was able to do this year, which wasn't a whole lot, you know, the offense kind of eroded just in terms of health. I mean, Marvin Jones was dealing with nagging injuries. He was playing really hot at the beginning of the season, and then he kind of tapered off. The offensive line, you know, Travis Swanson, Riley Reiff. The luck was only sustainable, I think. And I'm talking about the offense as a whole, their ability to come back and whatnot. I think that sustainability was just born out of the fact that, like, they did have a lot of, like, healthy guys. And to add to the fact, you know, to add to boot, like, I just think that Matthew Stafford, he took his play to a whole nother level. He really did. I mean, he threw 10 interceptions. That's the fewest interceptions he's ever thrown in a full season. His lowest interception percentage. And he was just very efficient. I mean, 65% completion percentage. That's 4 points up on, you know, his career average. I think that the finger thing may have been a little bit overblown because people made it out to be like, well, he's basically like a four-fingered quarterback out there, and he can't do what he, you know, has done all season long. But I think it definitely sits at the forefront of any discussion you have about him when it comes to the end of the season. Now, as far as Jim Bob Cooter is concerned, I think that they just have a really good working relationship. I think that they trust one another, and I think that they have a very good working relationship. I don't think that it's just like, oh, Jim Bob Cooter is making Matthew Stafford better. I think Matthew Stafford might be making Jim Bob Cooter into, you know, there's this kind of like symbiotic relationship between those two guys.
That's an interesting theory. I don't think I've heard anyone really say that, but it's worth kind of exploring that situation. You just kind of wonder why he didn't make Joe Lombardi a better offensive coordinator. He wasn't smart enough.
Wasn't butt chugging enough.
What?
I really don't know how to process the Joe Lombardi thing. Like, we can all say he was awful in hindsight, but I mean, when he came to town, it's Philip Green. He was so fucking smart. He didn't know too much.
Well,
so
the first year that he's here, they go 11-5.
Yeah. Although granted, that was, I mean,
it was a lot a lot to do with the defense. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, Stafford, 22 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Like, he was still like that's not too far off from 24 touchdowns and 10 picks.
Yeah, but he wasn't nearly the same. I mean, you're talking.
No, he wasn't, right?
Barely 60% completion percentage.
I mean, we could go back to those DVOA numbers too. Like, that offense was like, what, 24th, I think, in the league during that year too.
What?
Yeah, but I don't know. I want to say this to Jeremy's point real quick though. Like, the numbers tell you, like, oh, they weren't too far apart. But all of us, like, in this, you know, on this podcast right now, can all agree. Like, it's just something in, like, seeing the way that he's seeing the strides that he's made as being a quarterback over the past 2 years. Like, from, like, last season watching Matthew Stafford to, like, 2 years ago, like, I don't think that the Indianapolis Colts drive happens in 2014.
I mean, I don't think you would even recognize Matthew Stafford from 2 years ago if you watched him.
Absolutely not.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, we're throwing out all these stats, but let's talk about his mobility, right? Like, that has been, in my opinion, the biggest change in his game, and I don't know if that's the result of Lombardi or Jim Bob or just Matthew Stafford progressing as an NFL quarterback, but his movement in the pocket is the reason why he took the big step towards elitism this year. Yes.
Elitism.
And yes, it shows up on the stat board too. I mean, if you care at all about QBR, ESPN's QBR, this was his best year. 2016 was his best year, even better than 2011 when he threw 40 touchdowns.
So is it just a matter of people just need to see another year out of him before they will believe?
I think they need to see Lions success, because
a playoff win.
Yeah.
They need to see a playoff
and
win.
Probably even more than that, because one playoff win doesn't really do you much. So Houston won a playoff game, but no one's crowning Brock Osweiler or anything.
Yes, they are. They're crowning him starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, that's nothing. That is a tight job.
But I'm just saying, in the terms of narrative, we had already written the book on Brock Osweiler going before Houston won that playoff game.
Right.
I
was going to say he should have been the starting quarterback of the Detroit Lions, according to 97.1.
Shout out Mike Sullivan.
But I'm just saying, the narrative was cleaved because you did see some guys on the national level giving credit to Stafford and saying that he's, you know, risen himself up the ranks. But at the same time, you also had people saying, it's the Lions. It's, you know, I'm not ready to buy into this team, but I'm just saying, like, if you approach that, you have the cleaved narrative. What a playoff win gives you is you start to win that, right? And that's where this all comes down to. It comes down to the narrative because, like, I mean, we've seen the all-time great quarterbacks have bad seasons before.
Yeah, it just all comes back to the shitty QB wins thing.
But I'm just saying, like, you know, although granted, again, hindsight is a disinfectant. Like, I just keep thinking back to John Elway near the end of his career where he still hasn't won a Super Bowl. And like before those 2 years, the Broncos and their defense carried him all the way to the mountaintop. I'm trying to remember what it was like back then. But granted, the sports commentary, it's really morphed and evolved since that time, too.
It has. But I mean, in the end, the narrative doesn't matter because Matthew Stafford's going to get paid this offseason. He's going to get paid more than any quarterback at the moment. And then next year, it's going to be someone else's turn. People are going to get all uppity over it, but it doesn't really matter because it's going to happen and people are going to forget about it when it's someone else's turn.
You say the narrative doesn't matter, but that's the whole reason why we're here.
We don't matter. I'm fully aware that what I say don't matter.
No, I'm not saying we matter. Nothing we says matters, but I'm just saying as someone who observes the observing in sports media, that's why the sports media is there. It looks at these games and it tries to craft because the history and the score box will just tell you everything you've seen, right? Like why are all these people on Sports Talk Radio? It's there to try to dissect the narrative as it's happening.
So, okay. So what's the narrative that's blocking Matthew Stafford from being successful? Is it the fact that he plays for the Detroit Lions?
Or is it the fact that he's not had a playoff win?
No. But a playoff win does not
happen. Oh, you're asking
me. I'm saying a playoff win does not happen unless you have a team. Like, it is not, like, one quarterback cannot do that on his own.
I think it's a little bit of both there, though. It has to be, you know, and plus the fact that everyone will just, there's still out there people who will say, well, he played with Calvin Johnson. Because that was the big thing going into it. It's like, well, you know, he had Calvin Johnson. And that it's not there. It's now, well, it's the Lions, or it's the fact that they haven't won a playoff game. And yeah, that is the QB wins, which is stupid. And we do give a lot of pushback to it.
Part of me agrees with Jeremy in the sense that I fully recognize that narratives matter, but like, I mean, we were all going to lose our minds if Kirk Cousins signed whatever contract he was going to sign until he got franchise tagged. And then next year it'll be quarterback X. And then the year after that, it'll be quarterback Y, just like with Joe Flacco. Like the Joe Flacco thing is almost just kind of like a joke now. And, you know, it only comes up when Joe Flacco makes an oopsie.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, I think I'm trying to figure out the relationship between Matthew Stafford and the city of Detroit, because it's such an interesting one. And it's so predicated on, I think, just an entire fan base that's just so ready to experience success on a level that they haven't in over five decades. So it's a carousel that goes round and round and up and down. And I'm not too sure what to make sense of it, because with Matthew Stafford, he's the most talented quarterback in the franchise's history. And I mean,
and some will say that's not good enough.
Some will say that's not good enough, but then you even said yourself, Chris, that, you know, the narrative started to change a little bit with Stafford by midseason. He's making all of these come from behind victories. Now all of a sudden he's in the MVP discussion. And then what gets in the way? Like, you know, an injury, and then the team falls off.
Mm-hmm.
So then what are we to make of Matthew Stafford? Like, is he a successful quarterback, or is it the Lions that are getting in his way?
Or is that whole season just who he is?
What, somebody who can almost get them there, but ultimately can't,
then falls apart down the stretch? I'm just playing devil's advocate.
No, I totally invite that. I can't make sense of it. I can't give you an answer. I don't think anybody in this team can give you.
Right.
I don't think anybody in this city, anybody in this fan base can give you a definitive answer. Jeremy, can you?
Well, is that it?
Yeah, I think he's a great quarterback. I think he's a top 10, maybe top 5 quarterback right now.
Why hasn't he won a playoff game?
Because it's not enough to build a team. I mean, this team was out of weapons, essentially, in the down the stretch because they had Golden Tate, they had Marvin Jones. That was about it. You know, their two top options out of the backfield were gone. Their defense was the worst in the league. Like, I don't how can you expect that to win? I mean, he's not and will never be the level of an Aaron Rodgers quarterback where he literally can carry the entire team.
That's not
and maybe okay. That's not maybe what, that's what frustrates people.
That's not what TJ Lang said though. He's going to teach him how to read defenses. Just like Aaron Rodgers does.
But there are
thing?
So
can he do that Aaron Rodgers thing where with the hard counts to pull people offside? I would love that.
There are so few quarterbacks in this league that can carry their team through the playoffs by themselves. Even Peyton Manning couldn't do it. Remember the knock on Peyton Manning? He couldn't win in the playoffs? That was the early knock on him, right? And then suddenly got running games and he suddenly got at least somewhat of a defense. But right now, Matthew Stafford is in the Peyton Manning's, you know, first 5-10 years of his career right now. That's where he is, where people are going to criticize him for not making the playoffs or not getting far in the playoffs, but you got to look elsewhere where the problems are happening.
Well, I just bring this up because we are nearing the draft, and God forbid we are going to have start the takes yet again about save yourself the money, just draft a quarterback. Maybe not this year, maybe after a bad year with Stafford or something. I'm just saying, like, people will always die because the new shiny thing entices them. And how many of these quarterbacks in this class do you think are actually going
to
work out?
I mean, a lot of that has to do with people who think that they can be salary cap managers. And they're like, well, you know, I heard that it's best to spend the least amount of money on talent. So if I can get somebody who's really good and I don't know. It's just they're trying to play like four-dimensional chess.
Yeah, it's like what we were talking about last week with the Green Bay Packers, who, you know, they've let so many guys go, but they feel like they were just going to be able to replenish this all through the draft, and they're not going to be able to.
Right. I don't know. Just people will see quarterbacks in the draft. Like, I have so much pity for somebody who's going to take Mitchell Trubisky in this draft and trust him to do anything.
Even if it's your Browns?
If the Browns take him, Jesus take the wheel.
Do you want to just switch your AFC team at that point?
No, because you know what? Brock Osweiler would beat out Mitchell Trubisky in a training camp.
I honestly think there's going to be somewhere between 0 and 1 successful quarterbacks out of this draft.
Like, okay, so I'm just, again, I'm looking at the top ones again. Kaiser.
No.
Who, I mean, he had a good year. He had a good single year, but then his like last year at Notre Dame, he fell the hell apart. The Bears looked really into him, but I mean, they seem to have backed off picking up Mike Lennon. Trubisky, which is just fart.
Okay, something that I heard about Mitchell Trubisky that's really interesting. So he was Mr. Football in Ohio, but he doesn't go to Ohio State. That mm-hmm. should be a cause for concern immediately. If he's the best quarterback in the state and the state's most prestigious football university doesn't want him, he doesn't start until his senior year.
Which seems to happen a lot to these North Carolina quarterbacks.
Which is just bizarre, though. Like, if he's so good, why didn't he play before this? Why wasn't he deemed the starter, you know, before this? And he has one, and sure, he blows all the season passing marks off the door, but like, okay, then why wasn't this guy doing this before? Why didn't he win the job as a junior or as a sophomore? Like, I'm so not sold on Mitchell Trubisky.
We haven't even talked about Deshaun Watson. That's kind of where he's at on our radar right now.
I think that if there's going to be one quarterback that is successful out of this draft class, it's going to be him.
Really?
I have faith in Watson.
Okay, I'm biased to Kaiser because Kaiser is from Toledo.
Oh, I thought you were going to say because he was a Domer.
No. He's from high school in Toledo, Central Catholic.
I think Kaiser is going to permanently be on the bench.
So you think Watson's going to be the most successful? Because no one's talking about Watson.
No, which is interesting. But nobody's talking about him. But in the SB Nation mock draft that they're having right now, the Bears took him at number 3. And let me say that if the Bears take Watson at number 3... that would give me cause for concern as a Lions fan. Like, I don't want Watson to be in the division. I really don't. I think that he's going to be the one quarterback out of this draft class that actually, like, causes a stir.
I'm kind of with you there a little bit, but at the same time, I'm I'm not worried about the Bears no matter what they do this year.
I think we should leave all the quarterback stuff there because we're starting to veer into the draft.
I can't believe we're even talking about quarterback stuff.
The John Gruden QB camps, they're on TV.
Yeah.
People watch that stuff. I don't know who, but are you pleased if you watch John Gruden QB camp, Ryan? Our expert on what activities the police partake in?
I think a lot of police watch John Gruden's QB camp.
Okay.
I think they tune in. Like, you can hear sirens in the distance when he's having them draw shit on the whiteboard.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more draft stuff. I think we got a little bit of optional notes here to talk about. And then Rage Corner's back because we're very mad about someone who's raising the bar way too high for the kids these days. Pride of Detroit podcast rolls along. Let's talk a little bit about some draft stuff before we jump into our Rage Corner. Michigan Pro Day was this week. A lot of our fans are probably very interested in that. Michigan, with a lot of guys looking pretty early up on the boards. I mean, I know that originally we thought Taco Charlton wasn't going to be there at 21. Now I've seen him all over the place. There's that. There's Jabril Peppers. Quite a few guys that Michigan had lined up out there. Like, do we have any kind of notes or thoughts from the pro day, Jeremy, our resident Walmart Wolverine?
Well, it's tough because I'll let that slide, you son of a bitch. But
I think we should clarify that Jeremy graduated from the University of Michigan.
He did graduate. He is an alum. He is an alum, yes.
So he's a real legitimate piece of scum.
It's tough to pull any notes from Michigan's Pro Day because it's closed. They don't really release any of the information, but you did get some interviews, and I don't know. There's a lot of interesting prospects coming out of Michigan, and we talk about Taco a lot. There's a lot of talk about Jabril Peppers, not really as much with the Lions because I think most people that aren't Michigan homers agree that he's not a great fit in Detroit. But
unless you're Dave Burkett and you want to turn the internet upside down for a day and say that he's a fit for Michigan in a mock
love
draft.
Love you, Dave. Love you.
But I don't know. There are actually, outside of Taco, who I think would make a fine addition in the first round, there are some late round guys. I do like J.U. Chesson and Amaro Darbo. And then there's Jordan Lewis, who I was starting to get very high on because I think he, in terms of like coverage, I think he's a lot better than Jabril Peppers. But obviously this domestic violence stuff needs to be sorted out before we can talk really about when to draft Jordan Lewis.
It's definitely a sticking point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the only other real interesting prospect is Jake Butt, who obviously tore his Achilles during their bowl game. He said he could be back as soon, I think he said, as July, which seems to me like just posturing for drafts.
Who are these doctors? Who is Sidney Jones' doctor who he tore his Achilles like a couple of weeks ago, and he's like, oh, yep, doctor told me I'll be back and ready to play this year. Like, right. That's not happening.
Sorry, I said that Jake Butt tore his Achilles. It was just his ACL. Not his.
Right, but is still insane. I mean, that happened in what, January?
Yeah.
Right before January, December 30th or whatever.
Okay. People were talking very highly of him as a tight end prospect, too. I even thought, you know, I mean, even with that on his record, do you think that could be an interesting prospect there for the Lions? We've been talking about tight end as kind of a later round need, so.
He's kind of the dual tight end that would fit the Lions profile right now. The question is just when do you take a chance on him at this point?
Yeah.
And no, I don't know, like fourth round pick, I think I would go for that. I honestly have no idea where he's going to go. It's tough with injuries like that because some team might be willing to spend something like a second round pick on him. I doubt it with Jake Butt, but you never know. So if he's there in the fourth, even in the fifth, of course I'd consider him.
I think Chris Wormley is an interesting prospect too. I'm not sure if He kind of fits what the Lions necessarily, or I don't think he fits in where the Lions will be drafting, because he definitely isn't a first round pick. Probably a little bit too high to take him with their pick in the second round. So I think that he's going to fall in like maybe in like the beginning of that third round, like before the Lions would be able to come around and take a chance at him. But I think my favorite Michigan prospect is definitely Taco. My least favorite by a long shot is Jabril Peppers, because I legitimately don't see him being an effective player on defense at the NFL level. I really don't. Like, the reason I just don't see him being successful is because, I mean, what did he do so great at Michigan? He bounced around from position to position. He came there and said that he was going to be Charles Woodson. And I know when you're 18, you don't really know what you're saying and don't have a whole lot of forethought. But you can't say that you're going to be a playmaker like Charles Woodson and then only have one interception and 10 passes defended in your college career.
So you think he got his Heisman nomination just because of his offensive play?
And special teams? And special teams, yeah.
I think we should mark what you just said, like bookmark it, so that we can pull it out 2-3 years later and hear what you just said.
Right. Okay, so we should also bookmark the thing that I'm about to say, is that the only areas that Jabril Peppers will succeed in the NFL is on special teams.
Jesus Christ. Can we get to the Rage Corner before you damage this any further?
The worst Michigan prospect is Devion Smith. Stay the hell away from him.
Wally, a good segue into Rage Corner, because it used to be so neatly tucked in, was Wally's World. But Wally said that Devion Smith reminded him of Le'Veon Bell. And I think it's just because of the Avion.
Probably. All right, get to your rages.
I was really hoping just to play Wally's World music. But you got to it too quickly to give me a second to drop it in there. So let's give him the Rage Corner.
Suck my
yelling.
Can you take a break?
Yelling.
Can you take a break?
I'm yelling at you.
Can you take a break?
Yelling.
Can I get my sucked?
Can you hear me? Yelling.
Can I get my sucked?
Yelling. Yelling.
Are you ready to suck now? Have you got it all out? Mad, ain't you?
Stupid.
Red face.
Listen.
Now you're calling me stupid.
Listen. Yes, I am.
This is Kangaroo Court.
You know what? You have a constitutional right to be a dumbass.
All right. What we got on the plate today? We got some college news on the plate today. Who wants to introduce this? Ryan, I think this is shared between you and me.
Sure, I can bring it up and I can send it right back to you. So, on Sunday, the North Carolina Tar Heels faced off with the Kentucky Wildcats. And it was a very intriguing matchup, and it turned out to be a very entertaining game.
Before we get too deep into this, I do want to say, if you haven't seen the videos out there of the Kentucky fans, like, their reactions shifting in real time, go look for it. It'll bring you joy, unless you are a Kentucky.
It'll bring you joy, but then at the same time, you'll watch it and say, I've been that person before. It's like looking at a very, very weird hourglass. But anyways, so long story short, North Carolina ends up winning the game, because one Mr. Luke May, who had not made a whole lot of a splash in college basketball this season, hit the game-winning shot to send North Carolina to the Final Four.
This was the late game, too, yeah.
Yeah, it was the late game. And
Important
Luke May,
year for a reason.
Luke May was enough of a soldier to not only hit that game-winning shot for his basketball team, but he is a true blue. No pun intended. He's a true baby blue student athlete, because not only did he hit that shot, he got up for his 8 a.m. class the following morning.
Okay. A few things here. One, it's Tar Heel Blue. Two, not to jump on you, I'm sorry.
Baby Blue.
Distinct. It's you would not do well in Raleigh.
I don't think I'm going to do well from what you and I have to say about this in Raleigh.
Yeah, so. we're about to slag on this here. So number two, there is a very easy layup joke here I could make. Wow, someone from UNC actually went to class. But more importantly, like, this has been getting a lot of praise from a lot of people. Like, and rightly so, talking about, like, that's a student athlete. That's what you do. That's, you know, this warms my heart. No. And it's not anything about paying the athletes. In general, I would like to see, you know, it's not about paying the athletes here. It's about...
Yeah, don't get off topic, Chris.
No. What are you doing, young man? What are you doing, Mr. Luke May? Don't raise this bar for the rest of us. You had more than ample opportunity to take this class off. No one would have begrudged you. And now people are going to look at him as like, well, he was up all night hitting that game-winning shot, and he went to class at 8 a.m. What are you doing with your life? No, I don't need this. I don't need this at all. No.
No, I woke up this morning and I went to work. I played at 11:15. I had a hockey game in Macomb, and I had to drive home 45 minutes. So I didn't get home until like 12:45. I had to be up at work at 6 o'clock in the morning. Come at me, Luke May.
Oh, really? You're taking it even farther. I'm advocating from the slacker perspective. Don't raise the bar for the rest of us. You're coming at it from I'm the harder worker. I'm trudging up the hill uphill both ways.
The funny thing is, this was a business 101 class, so it's a freshman level class. So I'm sure that there's some kind of attendance policy where if you miss so many days that you'll probably not receive any credit for it. But on top of that, if you're Luke May, why are you not showing up to school the next day? You are literally going to be the king on campus.
Yeah, man. Like, you're already
a
basketball player at UNC.
Don't you want to soak all of that in? You just hit the game-winning shot against Kentucky to send your team to the Final Four. You don't want to show up. Look, I have zero problem with these kids, like, giving him a standing ovation in class. That's fine. But you better be giving him a standing ovation because he hit the game-winning shot. You better not be giving him a standing ovation because, oh, gee, oh, boy, he showed up to class. What a student-athlete. He's fulfilling the student part of being a student-athlete. Wow.
Non-ironically, I think you guys are way off base. Way off base.
What? No. I'm going to advocate for anyone taking it easy.
That's fine. If you think he should be lazy, that's fine.
No, it's not even that. I just think you are allowed to have, as Ryan points out, you're allowed to have a little bit of allowances to that, right? I'm sure he has a great attendance record. And this is like, you know, if he had one day off, that would be fine. People would completely understand. You're not missing much in Business 101 except talking about widgets. I've taken those classes before. They fucking suck.
Wait, Jeremy, do you have a rebuttal?
Yeah, well, you said, you played basketball and then came to work at 6 in the morning. How was your press conference after your game? How was your 3-hour flight after the game?
Oh, literally cry me a river. I'm a man. I'm 40. Okay, Luke May is a kid. He's got the energy to do this.
Get out of here.
I also want to say that Ryan's younger than me, but he came from the trudge uphill both ways perspective. And I'm up here just, I'm basically the dude right now. It's like, man, take it easy.
No, I literally, that was all in jest, the fact that I was out so late.
But I mean, the schedule of a student athlete is pretty grueling, is it not?
Don't raise the bar for everyone else.
Jeremy, did you not go to school?
Yes, I did.
How hard is it to show up to class?
It's not hard, but I also did nothing every minute that I was not in class.
Oh, okay. Well, when I was in school, I worked 40 hours a week and had a job.
Man, when I was in school, I always made sure I took the maximum number of days I could get off.
Well, didn't everybody?
Yeah, that's the whole point. These aren't cell phone minutes. They don't roll over.
Why have we talked about rollover minutes so many times on this podcast?
Do they still do phone companies really rollover minutes anymore? Isn't everyone unlimited now?
Singular Wireless died a long time ago, Chris.
Yeah, serious.
You know what does still roll over? Cars.
Hey, do you think Luke May took a car to class today?
Well, if he did, I bet it was definitely 6-cylinder.
a six-cylinder because it needed a lot of pickup in the morning? Like, he really needed to go. Do you think that he has a four-cylinder, but he borrowed his roommate's car that's a six-cylinder because somebody bought it for him illegally because he's a basketball player?
I was going to say, who do you think is paying for his car right now?
That's a good point. Do you think that he would chill out for a six-cylinder or an eight-cylinder? Do you think they'd get him a V8?
They definitely get him a V8.
Like the difference between a V8 and a four-cylinder, that's like 100% more cylinders.
Look,
I heard a really interesting stat the other day. The last one-and-done North Carolina basketball player was Marvin Williams.
Really?
In 2005.
I can kind of see that.
It's pretty impressive.
It is. I mean, North Carolina's had some good guys, but they really haven't had those, like, yeah, those one-and-done guys. But I've got some other notes here. Before we move on to the mailbag, just want to... Actually, do you want to save this for the mailbag, us talking about Robert De Niro movies, or should we just save that for a completely different podcast?
I think that should get like 60 minutes. So
okay. An off-season talk amongst yourself. Me and Ryan were talking in the Slack today about, we got started on A Bronx Tale with The Working Man's a Sucker, and we just got sucked down the rabbit hole of Robert De Niro movies about Italian-American hard scrabble families and or mobsters.
I love 70% of A Bronx Tale, but that kid who is in there with De Niro is so overmatched in every scene.
Holy
that they're
shit,
in.
Yeah. This little teenage squirt in here having to work with a fucking legendary Robert De Niro.
It's like it would be the equivalent of like seeing like Matthew Stafford and Jake Rudock in practice.
That's also called The Family, and it was probably the worst movie Robert De Niro's ever done. Let's move on to the mailbag. Time, as always, hashtag ask POD. We try to get to as many questions as we can each week and try to roll through them all. Ask us about anything, not just the Lions. We actually tend to go more for the off-topic questions first for some godforsaken reason. Jeremy, we have a couple of reviews. We always read our iTunes reviews first.
Yes,
kind of the stroking of the ego.
Stroking of our ego, and we give you guys a chance to say whatever the hell you want. This is kind of the only time that we are mandated to say whatever our listeners say. And we're up to...
Legally within reason.
Sure. And we're actually up to 49 reviews, so if you want to be that 50th, get in there. We'll maybe do something special for you, but probably won't. Anyways, Kuzno... sent us a review, 4 stars, titled They Dared Me To. And his review reads, "So I got to the end of the recent mailbag podcast, which we did about 2 weeks ago, which was just mailbag questions. My question was not read, and the host couldn't believe anyone was still listening. While I totally understand that sentiment, I was still listening. They stated anyone that held on to the end of their nonsensical ramblings must leave a review for being that committed. So I'm doing just that. I've been listening for quite a while, at least the 2016 season. The Lions' insights are on point, but the conversation does venture down several rabbit holes of wrestling, sandwiches, and the like. If you are Lions fans, the POD cast is mandatory listening, period. Do you put a period after the word period? Seems right.
What was the name on that one again?
Kuzno, K-O-O-Z-N-O.
Kuzno, I'm sorry if we didn't get to your question. Sometimes we just, you know...
Keep
sending them. Eventually you'll get through. That's all I can say. I'm sorry. Sometimes we just, it's, and that sentiment about who's listening near the end, it happens a lot. And it's because we record these things like all night long. And that exhaustion is us you're feeling there too. So we try going hard in the fourth quarter, but everyone has their doubts.
Some things to include in your questions, if you'd like to hear them read on the Pride of Detroit podcast mailbag, include cars and
food.
And food.
Yep.
And And Mr. Pickles.
Robot, you meant to say.
No. Okay, what's the other review, Jeremy?
The other review is from TrySam2. 5 stars. He says, it is the shiznit. Because I guess we're still using that word. Longtime listener, this show brings entertainment, banter, solid lines information, thoughtful perspectives, and it may very well have the most adequate host around.
Ooh.
The time and energy put into the show is appreciated. Keep up the great work, gentlemen. Go Lions.
I appreciate it.
How many stars was that?
That was 5-star review.
Five stars is not adequate, Chris.
No, that's true. That's true. It's beyond. He said beyond. It's beyond adequate. Most adequate.
I think what's most shocking about that review is that it complimented Chris, and he actually took the compliment well.
Yeah, usually I just kind of like shrink back and hate praise because that's how my warped mind works.
Chris's favorite response to praise is like,
"What's wrong with that person?
Why do they see any redeemable qualities in me?"
Pretty much, yeah.
Who knows? I mean, if you stay on this rate, Chris, you might work your way up to above average host.
Whoa.
Maybe. let's not put the cart before the horse. Okay, let's get to some questions. One Pride asks from Lions SB52, who has the best beard on the team?
Oh, man.
Are we talking about the Pride of Detroit team or the Detroit Lions team?
Oh, that's why Jeremy jumped to oh, man, because he thought about the man whose beard is on his head in his profile picture on Twitter.
R.I.P.
Who even has a good beard on the team anymore?
Keyshawn Robinson.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. That's right. The spittle dropping down it and everything.
Answer right there. Okay, next question.
Go ahead.
No, sorry. Do you have something else there, or is that just...
No, I was trying to think of who on the Pride of Detroit staff has a beard.
Me and Mike. And does Ken have a... Ken has a beard, too.
Does he?
I thought he did. Last I saw him at the open practice, I think he did.
Oh, okay.
I have no clue if Andrew has a beard. I don't think he does.
I don't think Andrew does either. We'll find out shortly.
Yeah.
We'll report back on this question later.
We will. We're writing it down right now. Blake Berry asks, if the POD staff bought a car, what would it be?
I'd pitch in 2 cylinders. How many cylinders would you pitch in?
1.5.
Okay.
What was the car that you got from the rental place that we took to Grand Rapids? Because that car had 2 cylinders.
What was that? It was like a little Toyota?
I think it was a Nissan something.
It was a Nissan.
It was a Nissan Versa.
Yeah.
Yes, that was it. Yep. Yeah, the official car of POD.
The official car of POD.
No, we need something a little bigger. We need something a little bigger. We need something that would carry the whole gang.
Like a muscle car.
Monster truck.
I was thinking of like a micro bus or something.
I have my chauffeur's license, so I can drive a 14-passenger bus.
There you go. Want to go party bus?
2019 from the Lions play in Vegas.
Yep, it's happening now. All right,
sure.
We'll take a bus across country.
I'd love it if we could like somehow meet up at LA there, because I know we're going to fly into LA, get that bus, head up there, and at some point I will whisper into your ear, we were somewhere around Barstow on the edge of the desert when the drugs began to take hold.
Either that, or that'll happen on the way there, and on the way back, it'll be a scene from Mad Max Fury Road. Chris will be on top of the bus screaming about Valhalla. Alex will be inside the bus just shaking his head and thinking that there's nothing good about this scene other than the makeup and special effects.
Alex Reno does not like Fury Road the way I do.
No.
He just doesn't.
He's a big fan of Nocturnal Animals, so that says what kind of person he is when it comes to the movies that he likes. I'm so glad he isn't here to defend himself.
I'm kind of a trash movie lover.
No, you like Robert De Niro movies, so you're...
I do, but most of the modern movies I watch are like trashy action shit, like Godzilla, like the one like non-action movie I think I've seen in the past 5 years was like Don John with
Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Yeah, and Scarlett Johansson, yeah. I saw it with a lady friend, yeah.
That is a romantic movie to see together. You should go see Kong Island, by the way.
I will, and I'll probably go see Ghost in the Shell. I'll probably still hate it, but I will go see Ghost in the Shell anyway, because I am a major stan for that the original movie and all the other stuff that's come out around Ghost in the Shell. So it's going to suck and I'm going to hate it, but
Kong Island was good. Go see it.
Yeah. This question was brought to you by Nissan Versa, the official car.
Jesus Christ. I hope no one's listening to this right now. Evan at Big Slick McDick, friend of the show. If the Lions had to trade owners with another team, who would you choose? There is a very staid answer to this, and I hope you don't give it to me, Jeremy, because I will.
I don't know if I have an answer, to be honest. Maybe. God. The Hines guy? Who's the Steelers owner? That guy.
Oh, my Lord.
I don't know.
The Hines guy?
The Hines guy.
The ketchup guy.
It's the Rooneys. It's the Rooneys.
He seems pretty active. I like kind of an outspoken guy who's going to be proposing things at the owners' meetings.
See, that's kind of the state answer I didn't want to hear, but that's fine. Whatever. I don't care anymore.
If we could trade owners with anybody, I would trade owners with the first Pakistani American billionaire and business tycoon who ever bought an NFL franchise, and that's Shahid Khan.
Serious answer, I would probably like the Seahawks owner, because that was quite a interesting little thing he did up there, you know, kind of a outpost team, and they turned into that kind of a big deal. That seems pretty cool. Even though he totally riffed the 12th man shit off of Texas A&M, but hey, you know, you do what you do.
You want the co-founder of the Zune to be your owner?
It's Paul Allen. He's
the Zune. The Zune was a perfectly decent MP3 player.
Says the adequate host.
Says the adequate host. Yes. My less than serious answer would be what's his first name? Biscotti, the guy who owns the Ravens right now.
Dude, I do not know enough owners. I literally, right? Like, the only owner that came to mind was Shahid Khan, just because he has such a wonderful mustache.
It'd probably be, like, my non-serious answer would be Steve Biscotti, because I see that he likes to smoke cigars, and he probably does, like, a mountain of cocaine. He looks like the kind of guy who is just, like, I think that's an Italian last name. Yeah, I would like him as an owner.
Well, you also just described Tom Gores, the owner of the Pistons, too, so.
Pretty much.
I think we all agree that last place would be Dan Snyder. Is that right?
Yeah. Ooh. Definitely.
There's some other guys I'd put in last place, maybe.
Robert Kraft?
No.
He got punked by Putin.
That's true. He did. What about, what's the name of the guy who runs the Rams?
Mark
Davis. Mark Davis looks very disgusting to look at. I would not like Mark Davis.
Dude, like his like whole like face and hairline and stuff. Dude, very off-putting.
Someone, I think it was Bacon on Twitter, had a picture of like Al Davis from like when Al Davis was like 90 with like the Band-Aid on his head and his skin was cracking and his teeth were gross, and he looked less disturbing than current day Mark Davis.
Yeah, dude, Mark Davis looks a little inbred. It's kind of weird.
Why does Mark Davis decide to go with the Lloyd Christmas haircut all the time?
Yeah! Oh, it's so bad! It's so bad! This is the first thing Jeremy and I have agreed on in like 24 hours.
Like, it's awful. He's just unnerving to look at.
Mark Davis, bring people together. Except for the city of Oakland.
Also, Jim Irsay would absolutely not be an owner I would turn to.
Yeah, I agree. At first, I thought it was cool, like, how he was all social media active, and then, like, I saw through the weeds there, and it's like, oh, no, this is...
No, God, no. He's an Irsay.
This is, like, a Trump situation, and on social media, it's not a good thing.
Do you think if Jerry Jones had a social media account, it would be just as bad?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually, now that you mention it, I'm shocked that he doesn't.
Yeah, what? Somebody has to have, like, a fake Jerry Jones account, right?
There's a million fake accounts. It's Twitter.
The only reason Jerry Jones doesn't have a Twitter account is probably because he has no idea how to work it.
Yeah, and he's not content to let someone else be, like, tweeting for him. He wants to do it himself.
Yep.
Critical perspective, go into the comments now. The hypothetical end of an era. Let's assume the Patriots lose week one and do not stop losing games. How many consecutive losses before Belichick loses his job?
I love this question.
That's a very interesting question.
Would they permit him to go 0-16?
How many losses is too many for Robert Kraft?
I mean,
how many losses is too many for Tom Brady to hang it up?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't know where to put Robert Kraft in all of this. I know where to put Belichick. As soon as that first sign of like prolonged failure happens, everyone's going to start getting the fucking boot, including Tom Brady. He's not safe.
Well,
he wasn't safe coming into it, but he's not safe moving out.
There was the Monday night game where they lost to the Chiefs and everybody wrote Tom Brady off because he ended up getting benched, didn't he?
I something like that. I remember Steve Young losing his mind afterwards. Yeah.
Everybody thought, well, this is it. Brady's done. That was after a Monday night game. That was weird. Do you think that they'd fire him at it? What about 1-15?
But that's the problem. It's like, okay, I know Belichick would do that, but what would Robert Kraft do? I don't know what kind of a... It's been so long, I don't know what kind of a guy Robert Kraft is when the shit hits the fan.
I do.
You think he would get rid of him?
He's the kind of guy who gets a Super Bowl ring stolen by the leader of Russia.
He'd probably go in to try to fire Belichick, and Belichick would somehow end up as the owner.
Walk out, he's like, how did I just get fleeced?
I'm almost certain that he would let him go 0-16. He wouldn't get fired before the season ended.
I think that's about right, but I guess the question is, do you give him another season? Yeah, would he get another season?
I think yes. I think he would. I mean, I think the commenter put the over-under at like 22 or 22 and a half. I don't think I would put over 22 and a half. I think like 20. He goes 0-4 in that next season.
So you would fire him early into the second season of losing.
If he goes 0-20.
This mental exercise is so mind-numbing because I can't even wrap my brain around the idea of the Patriots not just losing a ton of games, but having a losing season.
Right. Not only having a losing season, we're talking about a winless season.
But let's be honest. I feel like if Bill Belichick goes 0-16, he's leaving. He's like, fuck this, I'm out.
But he would take down the entire team with him.
Oh, yeah. He would start an expansion team and be like...
No, he would... He would start coaching lacrosse, his true passion.
Joseph R. Sweeney 5, what is actually was the thing that feels good in that Tony Tony Tone song?
Well, if you couldn't tell by the splicing of a woman's moans in between, it's when two people really love each other. And
next question.
It depends on what your definition of it is.
It could be a four-cylinder sports car.
Elephant Trees. If Miles Bridges returns to Michigan State next year for his sophomore season, should I A, bet the house on Michigan State to win the national championship, or B, bet the field?
B.
The field.
Okay. Fair enough. GV42, if Jeremy wrote an article solely about Colin Kaepernick, Joe Mixon, and some bit of political information that showed obvious bias, how many angry comments would it get before comments got shut down?
That is an instance where comments are never up.
Comments are disabled. Comments are disabled before they're ever enabled.
And not I'm disabling comments on every article that day. I don't want people trying to go around creating like a fan post saying, let's talk about this article from Jeremy. That's not happening. We are becoming a no comment site that day that article goes up.
Oh, thank you. All right. Derek Brandt asks, is there going to be a list cast for favorite potato style? No, I'm not much of a potato fan.
Really?
Even for French fries. Like, I'll eat some French fries.
Is this an Irish versus Italian thing?
No, it's not even that. I just don't like potatoes that much.
Jeremy, do you have a favorite kind of potato?
I think it's mashed potatoes, but I mean, I could just do a fries list cast if we wanted.
I mean, the only kind of potato I'm interested in is a French fry that's unsalted.
But shit, like hash browns are so good too. Like, it works with. There are not many food items that work as a side dish for all three meals. Potato is one of those.
Don't you feel like the floor on hash browns is pretty low, though, sometimes? Like, don't you hate when you go to a diner and, like, they don't, like, cook them enough and they're, like...
They're just gross.
They're just, like...
Well, yeah, it's like biting into an uncooked potato. That's gross. That's super gross.
Yeah, I don't know. Whenever I get my hash browns, I'm always like, can you, like, make sure they're done? and then I leave them no tip.
Jesus, dude. Josh LaFon asks, what is the worst fast food joint?
It's definitely not Jack in the Box. Don't say it, Jeremy. It's not Jack in the Box.
It's Jack in the Box.
No, it's not. Why?
It is.
Why?
Because everything is garbage there.
No, it's not. This is the thing, is that everything is not garbage there, and you can get a lot of stuff for some really good value, okay? So you have to take that into account.
No, it's actually really expensive, too.
No, it's not. Two tacos for 99 cents? Where else are you getting that deal?
Dude, you show me that late night Munchies menu. That looks like a steal and heart attack.
That is, I'll admit that's a good deal, but that's it. Like, anything else, you're spending like $6 on a sandwich.
Dude, the only reason I'm going for Jack in the Box is either those two for 99 cent tacos or late night Munchies.
Dude, I saw some kind of monstrosity on a White Castle commercial the other day. I think White Castle is probably the worst fast food place. but they have some kind of, seafood crab cake sliders.
Oh, God.
I saw Checkers has like $2 fried shrimp boxes now, and they look sketchy as fuck.
Dude, like, they're...
Seafood, no. You don't do seafood at fast food. So maybe Long John Silver's is a good answer.
But they got the Hush Puppies.
Long John Silver's might be a good answer. But, like, I feel like that's not mainstream enough.
I mean, they used to be a lot bigger, right?
I think so.
Mr. Megal asks, should the Lions get AP? Megal, who is AP?
Triggered. Chris just got triggered.
Who the fuck is AP? You mean AD? All day? Adrian Peterson?
I can't believe you're so bothered by that.
I'm not bothered. I'm just asking why people have got stupid all of a sudden and forgotten what his nickname is.
I don't think that's it.
His nickname is Purple Jesus.
But what's it going to be now? He's
it's gonna... all day. It's all day. AD.
You realize his initials are AP, right?
Yeah, nicknames are not initials.
Some of them are.
Too many of them are now. And his nickname coming into the league was not his initials. It was All Day AD. And somewhere in mainstream, we decided that we are too fucking stupid to remember any nicknames that aren't just shortening a guy's name, like Andre Drummond to Dre, or someone's initials like Kevin Durant to KD. And as Zack Snyder from Detroit Jock City pulled out, can't wait to hear about, you know, EB and AA coming out of the backfield.
You mad, CL?
Yeah, I'm baboon-ass right now. Look, we would be too stupid today to come up with a name like King James for LeBron James. We'd just be like, oh, he's LJ.
Let me give credit, you know, if you want to take it to basketball real quick, let me give credit to Zach Lowe for pointing this out on his podcast, but if you go to Pro Basketball Reference, and you can definitely lose like 15-20 minutes of your day real easily just looking up players' names, because then they have nicknames listed too. We all know Nick Young is Swaggy P, but one of his nicknames is Bean Burrito.
That's great. I'd rather have that than Swaggy P almost.
I need to know the origins of Bean Burrito.
Cole Chapman asks, do you think Dwayne Washington will make the final roster if mid-round running back like Kareem Hunt or James Conner is drafted?
Dude, there is somebody who's not on anybody's draft boards right now, and his name is
John Cena.